This is an Enterprise Times security podcast. My name is Ian Murphy, and I'm here today with SSH in Boston.
I'm Tatu Ylönen, founder of SSH Communication Security, inventor of SSH. I've been in the cybersecurity field for the last 20 years.
We talk a lot about encryption of communications these days. The reality for a lot of companies is actually encryption has become as much of a burden as it has a bonus. They have gone to encryption to protect data, but now they're discovering that they don't know what goes on in that encrypted traffic. How do we get them to understand that encryption is a good thing and there are ways to understand what you do?
Encryption is a necessary thing. You cannot have cybersecurity on public networks without encryption. But sometimes you do need visibility, especially when there's remote access into your organization. You need to see what vendors are doing, what contractors are doing in your network, and we provide tools for that.
One of the challenges for organizations is when they look at their network traffic, they just see the encrypted traffic as a blob. They haven't quite got to the point of understanding where that encrypted traffic is going. For example, they don't break it down to that block of traffic is going to servers we own or to cloud services we use. That block of traffic is going to cloud services that our users have brought into the building and we're really not quite sure why it's going there. And that block of traffic, well, we don't know who's using that block of traffic. The problem is they're just seeing it as a blob. What do you think is preventing them doing even the basics of breaking that traffic out so that they can discover how much traffic is encrypted on the network going to places they don't know?
Encryption, by definition, it encrypts your data, so you cannot see what's going on unless you have access to the keys. And that means you can only inspect the traffic if it's going to a destination that you control, or maybe if you have to control at least one of the endpoints to be able to obtain the keys or sit in the middle. It can be either authentication keys or encryption keys. In our case, we work by having access to the server authentication keys in the connection.
So that means they can go back and they can start to understand at least what's going between their users and any cloud or anything that they own, because they will have set that encryption up. When it comes to making sense of other forms of encrypted traffic, should companies start now blocking all traffic that's going to locations that they don't know?
It's a serious concern. In at least some organizations, it makes sense to block traffic that they cannot inspect. Now, if it's an email going out, you may be able to inspect it at the email server. If it's traffic going to your cloud, that's servers you control. So you should be able to analyze the traffic using the keys that you can obtain from the servers using proper key management tools. But if it goes to the cloud, to a server you don't control, you have no idea what goes in. It can contain tunneling, so it could tunnel any traffic in or out of the organization. We've seen a number of cases where people use, for instance, SSH to log in from inside the network to a server in the cloud, and then they open what's called port forwarding from the outside. So it basically listens for connections on a port in the cloud, and whenever there's a connection, they tunnel it into the internal network and then to a server on the inside. This can be very dangerous. It can bypass firewalls. So having that policy control on a fine-grained level is important.
In your experience, when you talk to companies, how many actually have that level of policy in place?
Most people don't. The tools that can do that are few and far in between. The SSH Crypto Auditor is one of them.
Because they don't have that in place, there are other things they can do, though. They can actually set up other policies on their firewalls, begin to detect traffic that's going to other places. Do we have a problem with the level of sophistication of our looking at traffic? Because many of the tools that network teams use now have taken away the skills that they had 10, 15 years ago, where they had to understand what was going across the network. There's good and bad reasons for that. The bad reason is having de-skilled people just rely on the software they buy. The good reason is the vast amount of traffic they now deal with compared to 10, 15 years ago. They couldn't manage it the way we did back then. How do we get companies to review the tools they're using and actually make sure they're fit for purpose?
It's a tricky problem, and many companies don't really have the expertise in place to analyze and understand the risks. And often they just don't care. If it's not flagged by auditors, they just don't do anything. Audits and regulations actually play a very important role in actually protecting the society, not just the companies. It has to start there, and I think the technical people who do understand have to stand up and get the management to do something.
How often do you see the auditors actually engaged in this level of communications? Because we have compliance rules in place, we have governments changing rules on trying to weaken encryption or put more backdoors into encryption. But at the end of the day, the auditors don't necessarily have any more skills than the people in IT or even the user at the end of the link.
We see auditors all the time in customer cases we are involved in. It starts from things like SSH key management, which is really about access credentials management. We have customers who found over 3 million SSH keys granting access to their servers with 200,000 employees, 200,000 passwords, and then 3 million SSH keys that also grant access that they didn't know of. And auditors have been waking up. And when we talk about these things in auditor conferences, they're in shock. And how could they miss 90% of all the credentials in their last audit?
What was causing that particular instance?
SSH has been there for the last 20 years, and it's kind of been on the systems. Sysadmins have been installing those keys for convenience, for single sign-on, and for integrating applications for the last 20 years. There was no central control, there was no central provisioning process for that access, and the access was never terminated when people left. It turns out 90% of the credentials are actually no longer being used. They are just something that was created and never terminated when people left.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because here we are talking about the danger of encrypted credentials and what can be done. But the flaw is such a basic flaw, the failure to properly get rid of unused credentials, which affects a lot of companies. And it's a subject that we've talked about for 20 plus years in this industry, yet it is still there. How do we persuade teams to do a better job? Is it something that needs, some people suggest it needs to go away from IT and go to HR because human resources are responsible for the hiring and firing policies. Others believe it should stay with IT. What is needed to A, tighten that up, and B, then look and find all those broken credentials who are using encrypted sessions?
It starts from regulations, audits, and just awareness and prioritization. And if I look at the cybersecurity framework, for instance, the version 1.1 draft expressly says that you have to manage and audit and so on. Also, machine credentials and process credentials. And these, to a large extent, are what SSH keys are. They can also be used for people, but I think there's increasing awareness on these things. But it's so slow. I've talked about this for 5 years. I think it could take down a Fortune 500.
Compliance comes in. Companies look at compliance, and they don't have a mechanism by which they can interpret compliance and apply it to all their systems. What happens in most organizations is a committee looks at it, passes it down to IT. It's then broken up for the different applications, products, and divisions they have, and then people implement it as best they can. But they never really audit and check what's been implemented against what the company thinks is happening against what the compliance rules say. When do you think we'll finally get solutions for auditors and compliance teams that they can look at what is needed to be done and force that to be applied across a company, or at least very quickly identify failure points?
We've been providing a tool called the SSH Risk Assessor for auditors now for a couple of years. Increasingly, they are starting to use it for at least sampling to see what's the state of SSH access management in the organization. So I think that's a good thing. It's a learning process for them. Many auditors have been just asking questions and checking boxes. Mm-hmm. And even still today, only a small percentage of all audits actually looks at the technology, what's really going on. And we are finding that sometimes even the managers in the enterprise themselves don't really know that they have these credentials.
Part of that problem for auditors has come because most of them started out just doing financial auditing. And as regulations changed, they got told they were responsible for auditing computer systems and everything else. So they don't necessarily have the breadth of knowledge within their companies. Cybersecurity in particular, we have such a shortage inside enterprises and data centers that it's going to be very difficult for the auditors to gather that knowledge themselves. How do we begin to address that? Is it a case of when we look at auditors, their courses have to be adjusted now to include cybersecurity and encryption and systems?
I see the audit field kind of divided. We have penetration testers who are highly technical and knowledgeable on at least some things, but they may not understand the higher level process or concepts of provisioning and termination and so on. They don't really look at those things. And then we have the process level auditors who don't understand the technology, and they ask the questions and fill the checkboxes. And the middle ground is missing. Having some of that in audits would be important.
How much of this can we automate? The big pressure over the last couple of years has been with DevOps, and we're now seeing security becoming part of that. But when you talk to people, it's more about the design, development, deployment, and operation of applications. It doesn't actually deal with this issue of auditing and everything else. Should we be looking at the DevOps movement, looking at the whole automation, and saying, actually, we can build routines into the applications and into the management tools that can do this auditing at the correct level, rather than just providing another set of log files?
We built those tools. It's called the Universal SSH Key Manager. We constantly deal with DevOps processes. DevOps actually uses SSH to commit source code into repositories, to pull source code from version control systems into continuous integration, and then deployment is usually over SSH into cloud services. So it's everywhere in that process.
That sounds like really good best practice. The challenge is getting companies to use that as best practice.
They actually do that all the time, but the key management for that is not yet widely deployed.
Key management's become quite a sensitive subject around governments at the moment. In the UK, for example, we have the government wanting cloud operators and network operators to be able to decrypt data on demand. To do that, they have to have the keys. Now, companies are beginning to realize that it's not a case of buy a service from somebody and use that key. They need to actually take their own key to the service if they're going to protect it. How sophisticated are IT teams when it comes to understanding key management and making those decisions that it's the company buys the key, the company owns the key, and the company therefore moves the key to deploy and protect the services it wants rather than rely on the third party?
In general, I think the IT teams are not very knowledgeable about key management, and the UK requirement is very ill-conceived. It's just so easy to use your keys. If you want to hide your data, you use your own keys, no matter what the regulation says. And there's nothing the cloud service provider can do about that. It's only going to affect people who play by the rules, or maybe people who don't understand. But if somebody has even a modicum of understanding of the technology, they'll be able to walk around all those regulations and hide their keys in ways that make them very hard for the government to access.
We started to see key management as a service solutions appearing in the market to make it easy for companies to adopt cloud, take a key, and then use the key that they've generated. Do you expect to see a wider uptake of those systems over the next few years?
I do, especially with IoT, and key management for IoT, I think, is going to be an important field.
IoT's biggest problem is, do you trust it or don't you trust it? You don't know where it's come from, you don't know who built it. And most of the time, these IoT devices are outside of IT. Those security cameras, the fridges, the televisions, all those little devices that populate offices. How does IT get a better conversation with facilities management and purchasing so that when these devices come in, they at least get some visibility of them and can begin to think about key and protection?
We mustn't forget that there are also much bigger devices that we might call IoT, starting from things like harbor cranes, multi-million dollar machines, heavy industrial equipment. It's all getting connected to the network, often with real-time connections to the vendors for like preventative maintenance and monitoring and optimization and firmware updates so that they optimize the process for consulting purposes because they know how to tune the machines better than the end user.
An example of that is GE's digital twin program with all of the engines it ships now and its medical equipment, where you buy it, it creates a virtual copy of it and it monitors what you do.
But this actually loops back into where we started, the monitoring of that encryption. The vendor, of course, has to connect to those devices using encryption. We've actually had cases where we provide monitoring tools for the vendor's field service force to connect to equipment at customer sites. And they need monitoring into those encrypted connections that go into customers. Monitoring what goes on inside the encryption, I think you really hit an important point with that. It's for outgoing connections to your cloud services to make sure that there's no unwanted tunneling and no connections to cloud services that aren't yours, because those might be used to bypass your firewall and basically plug holes into your firewall. It's for internal privileged access, what happens in the internal network when sysadmins connect to remote servers. It's all encrypted. And how do you know if it's really a sysadmin or if it's a hacker or if it's malware? Then you have your own services organization connecting to customer sites, potentially to multi-million dollar machines that could cause massive damage if they go wild. You need accountability for your own people for that, and you want to be able to show that you didn't do it so that you are not liable.
None of this is new in terms of concerns. We've talked about the threat of insiders for over 20 years now. The insider's always been a threat and always will be a threat. That issue of stolen credentials, we don't necessarily understand when credentials are stolen. We try and now look for behavioural differences. Are those credentials working in a different way to how they've been working for the last 6 months? Are they accessing a different system? It seems that there's a better way to pick this up. And more importantly, once those credentials are stolen, we need to be able to revoke any keys that they've got associated with them. Do you see enough sophistication for dealing with stolen credentials and revoking keys, whether that be a key problem with a user or with a process or with an application or with an IoT device? We have to be able to track them and revoke them. That sophistication, is it really in place yet, or are we slowly moving towards it?
With the Universal SSH Key Manager, we absolutely have it. But if I look at most companies still out there, they don't have it. We have customers who don't know how many zeros there are in the number of SSH keys they have granting access to their production servers. We have people saying that they were all stunned by the number of keys they found. We have customers who aren't able to change their keys even if they know they have been breached. But they have tens of thousands of servers having those keys both on the client side and on the server side, and their business processes stop and they close doors if those keys are suddenly removed and changed. Often they don't have maps of what the connections are, so they don't know how to change the key in each end of the connection. It is a massive problem.
Who should be responsible? Is it an IT security team issue? Some of these things, as I say, never go near IT. They're actually purchased and acquired and put in place by facilities management, or even, increasingly common today, the business units. How do we get policies in place to make people deal with it?
It's an enterprise risk management issue. If something can potentially take down the organization for months, and I'll get into that a little later, how that can happen. If something can take a Fortune 500 down for months, what's the damage to shareholders that could happen? What's the reputation damage? Can a Fortune 500 recover if the IT systems are down for, say, 4 months? I would even say that the damage to shareholders can be in the tens of billions. We are talking about the level of risk that has to be in their quarterly reports or annual reports. It becomes a question of their lawyers, their risk management, and then ultimately cybersecurity and IT. It's often cybersecurity who does the engineering and policy definition work, but IT ultimately implements the requirements. And sometimes it's business units as well.
It's something we haven't really seen tested in court, is it? We haven't yet had the defense that my systems were taken over by a hacker, which is why those cars crashed, or why these users lost money. It's tended to be a case of people look at it from a jury perspective and it's the company at fault, it's the company on trial. Do you think we're going to start to see clever lawyers try and put everything on hackers, at which point there comes the question as to what was the company's responsibility and what was the company's liability?
We've had cases that result in massive damages to the... let's look at the Target breach a few years ago, which has been estimated to have cost them hundreds of millions of dollars. In most cases, hackers, they are looking for data or they are looking for financial gain. They aren't looking to destroy. But what if you are looking to destroy? If you gain access to the Active Directory server, which is pretty common, you can basically log into any server with high-level credentials. If the organization doesn't manage SSH keys, and they have millions of them on tens of thousands of servers, as a lot of organizations do, you can use them to jump from server to server. It's called pivoting. You pivot the attack through servers, going from one server to another. You break into one, then use local exploits to gain root access. You read all the private keys from there. Then you use those private keys to break into other servers. And then from each of those servers, you again root access, read the private keys, and use those to break to the next level of servers. So it's a spreading attack, and you can piggyback that on legitimate connections, timed at the same time, even injecting new commands into existing sessions rather than opening extra sessions. And it can be very stealthy if done in the proper way, and it can penetrate disaster recovery data centers and backup systems.
That's interesting, because if I look at many of the reports I've seen for advanced persistent threats and very complex attacks, this is a part that never comes out in those reports. I can't recall a report in the last 5 years where it's ever talked about the attackers gaining the private SSH keys and using that to spread the attack. Is it a widely used attack, or is it just a level of ignorance from many of the reports that just aren't not identifying it?
We've had publicized cases of rogue sysadmins penetrating thousands of servers using SSH keys. We'd had reports of them being sold for bitcoins and then being used to break into organizations. So it's happening. We saw in the Sony breach that they were taking exfiltrating SSH keys out of Sony, but we haven't seen the big attack yet that takes a Fortune 500 down, because not many people are motivated to do that. Hacktivists could be. In cyber warfare, that's exactly what you would do. Confuse or destroy.
Cyber warfare is becoming a dangerous game at the moment. We have governments increasingly seeing their intelligence agency ask for more power. This is no longer about detect and protect. It's detect, protect, and strike back. it suggests, with what we know from the last 10 years of the sort of information that intelligence agencies have been gathering from individuals and companies, that they may already own or at least have access to tools that give them a large number of these keys. Is it something that companies should now start to regularly look to change keys to have a key rotation system? Because the truth for a lot of organizations is once that key's put in there, it's forgotten about unless something breaks.
Absolutely, and it's absolutely critical to have internal defenses. You cannot assume that your internal network is going to be secure. There will be people who get inside. Then you have to control how they can spread within the network using AD credentials, using SSH keys, and by other means.
What is needed to make companies more aware of the need to change keys? Because they change user passwords on a monthly basis. They don't seem to have a key change process of a similar nature. Even if it was once a year, it would be an improvement.
I would say regulator attention, analyst attention, and audits.
What tools do organizations have at their disposal to be able to identify all the keys?
There's the SSH Risk Assessor, there's the Universal SSH Key Manager, and then there are a few other vendors offering solutions as well.
Brilliant. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.